At first, I tried to think of my essay artist statement diary mashup as I would have an assignment for an art history or theory of art course. I thought I should try to sound like someone who contemplates every brushstroke before she makes it, even if this isn't always how I work. I wanted my response to sound like me, though, not as if I were talking from behind a magic velvet curtain or calling down prophecy from the top of some snow-capped holy mountain. Laurent had more advice when I came out of the study after another false start and gave him a dirty look. "Just tell the truth," he advised. "As I see it, you mean," I said, tired and irascible. "Well, yes, of course," he said. "How else?" 2. Opening. This didn't happen to me when I was in shows in the past, not as it has this time. I'll be going about my daily business, putting on my shoes, combing my hair, eating an apple while looking out the kitchen window, when I remember that my work is hanging in a gallery a few miles from where I live. It is being subjected to the critical, sometimes hostile stares of the strangers who enter the space and stand in their high heels, on their bowed legs or flat feet, before my paintings, thinking that they could have done what I've done. Or maybe, more generously, thinking the opposite. They wonder where my ideas come from, how I choose my subjects, and how I learn to paint a face that looks more brooding and melancholy on the canvas than it probably would be in person. Equally disorienting is that I am responsible for this relationship, as short-lived as it might be, as glancing an impression as my work might leave on the gallery-goer. Susan Kraut, Chantal Schmidt, and I, along with Vie Bohème's owners Laurent Moller and André Sigui, were relieved that so many people, around 200 by Laurent's estimate, passed through Vie Bohème on the night of the spring equinox, March 21st, which was unseasonably cold. Maybe it was the promise of free wine. Whatever their reasons, people emerged from their homes and delivered themselves to Rue du Louvre at the appointed hour, and we were grateful. We smiled, we shook hands, we looked into each other's eyes. My own eyes, I'm sure, hopeful, but nervous, too. The night was a difficult one, even with the high spirits and all the hands reaching for other hands. It was filled with specters, suppressed but roaring expectation, people from our pasts and futures. We had spent so long preparing for it, thinking about it, worrying, doubting, wanting. I was showing my work with my adored painting instructor, but did not believe that I deserved to. My paintings looked fine, even good, I think, but I had spent so much time staring at them that I could no longer really see them, like the view from the window you have looked out for half of your life. It is like the face in the mirror, the known latitudes, the no longer suspenseful flaws and strengths. Inquiry. In college, one of my painting instructors said during a critique, "Each completed painting asks, who was the artist when she started? Who is she now?" When I arrived an hour before the opening officially began, Susan was already there, standing several feet back from her paintings, each mounted perfectly plumb. Susan was an emissary from my past, from my bubbly, foolish, earliest 20s. She looked so pretty, petite and smiling in turquoise beads and a black tunic dress embroidered with small blue, green, and red flowers, her light blue eyes taking everything in. We had seen each other twice in the 3 days that she had so far been in Paris. I was shy in her presence, but talked too much. I felt something like rapture, too, bewitched again as I had been years earlier by her gentleness, her sincerity, her steady hand on the brush, her sympathy, her eye for the whole intricate picture, no detail neglected. I looked at her the night of our opening and felt winded. It was how I'd felt during the first several weeks that I was seeing Laurent. I think this might be the exalted state, a celestial plane, its air dizzying, the heady altitudes that are visible from our earthbound stations but are mostly unreachable. That she felt as happy to be there as I did was immediately apparent, and also, I have to say, humbling. Here we were, looking upon concrete proof that it was possible to make it through the grinding sameness of most days, the self-doubt, the exhaustion, the worries that no one would ever be interested in your work again. All the feelings I had been living with on and off for the last 12 years, 3 or so years shy of half my life. Yes, we were in Paris, where I have been living for the past 9 months, but call me an ingrate. I had gotten used to many aspects of my life here, and this ability to adapt both saves us and does us in. If everything felt new all the time, there would be much less restlessness, fewer crimes of the heart or otherwise, but would we ever get anything done? I could only guess at Susan's feelings about her life as an artist, but I wondered if they weren't much different from my own, even with her huge talent and record of previous successes and exhibitions. On the early fall afternoon, when Laurent told me Susan would be one of the other two featured artists in Intérieur Intime, I remember staring at his right ear. How oddly pale it is, I thought, compared to his sun-brown face. Susan Kraut, my teacher? I asked stupidly. He nodded, and I said, well, would she really want to be in a show with me? Shouldn't it just be her work? Maybe next time, he said. We will see how it goes. We will see how her work sells, he was saying. Not, we will see how we like her. I knew he and André didn't like all the artists they represented. Some were almost absurdly demanding. The opening must be on a Sunday, not a Friday, and go from 11 p.m. to 4 a.m., with purple light bulbs instead of white ones in the gallery fixtures, and a hip-hop DJ and Cristal served by the case. Some were querulous and ungrateful, blaming their inability to sell every single canvas or sculpture on Laurent and André rather than on the whims of art collectors and the faltering economy. Later, I thought about the student-teacher relationship, how it is said that the best teachers want their students to surpass their own mastery of painting or sculpture or pastry making. From my own minimal experience teaching art at community centers and retirement homes, I know what it's like to feel that jolt of recognition, the almost corporeal thrill when you meet someone whose work shows irrefutable promise. Susan had acted as if she felt this about me, and for a few years I got by on the memory of her praise and kindness. This is the kind of thing that sends a student off to make a life as an artist rather than as a bookkeeper or a dog walker or a librarian. But even with Susan's early encouragement, I had given up on trying to make a career as a painter until Laurent appeared in New York and offered a hand up and scolded me for not trying harder, for feeling sorry for myself. There is also this fact. I have been enormously lucky. Few artists have been given what he has given to me. Student, teacher. Susan said a number of things when I was her student that I recorded in the journal I kept during those summer weeks in Chicago, when the air felt like heavy damp cotton you had to scissor through with your arms and legs. You have to love this because there are far easier ways to earn a living. Not so much orange, Jane. Save some for the construction cones. Composition in a painting is usually instinctive, but if you keep working, if you study how other painters handle it, you'll get better. Like you would if you were baking bread or building a house. One day you'll realize that you've gotten the hang of it. This can be lonely work, but it connects you to other people in ways that many of the things we could do with our lives do not. Vuillard is the artist I find my thoughts turning toward most often, at least 10 times a day, probably more. Remember to soak your brushes. The night of the show, she said, you and Laurent. Goodness, Jane, I'm still speechless. Do I look tired? Because I haven't slept more than 5 hours a night in the last week. I was so thrilled about being here. My husband thought I was drinking too much coffee and didn't believe me when I told him that I wasn't. You think you know what's ahead, and it's certainly not someone calling from Paris with an offer to put you in a show. When I was still living in New York, I felt like nothing was ever going to happen with my work, I said. Oh, come on, she cried, putting her hands on my shoulders to give me a good shake. You're too young to feel that way. I laughed. Well, I wasn't painting very much there. That was the problem. I felt intimidated. But here I don't feel that way as much, maybe because I'm not French. She nodded. Yes, probably so. It's important from time to time to remove yourself from a place you're familiar with. Whenever I caught sight of her that night, I'm sure I started smiling like an imbecile. Several times we looked at each other from across the gallery and started laughing, confusing the people who were standing with us, trying to talk to us, to flatter and flirt or express their suspicions about whether we knew what we were saying with our brushes and tubes of paint. What's so funny, they'd ask, but we didn't know. I'll try to paint it for you sometime, I said to one man who reminded me of my father, because I can't describe it in words. Really, he said, miffed. Is that so? The furrow between his emphatic black eyebrows deepened. But he ended up buying my Joni painting, the first I'd completed in Paris. Where would he put her, I wondered. What would he do in front of her, she looking on with her mournful eyes? These are the pages that I gave to Laurent, but he wanted more, and he was certain I had more to say. Over the next several weeks, I went ahead and wrote more pages, many more, but I only gave some of what follows to him.